It is my pleasure now to introduce to you Tina Galino, who is our keynote speaker today. And we're going to do things slightly differently. We're going to do it a little bit interview style. I'll ask Tina a few questions, and then we're going to open the floor to you to ask Tina a couple of questions. And then we're going to have a 9-minute video which explains the NDIS and some issues from the point of view of people who have mental health conditions. And Nathan Grixty will introduce that. And then we'll move straight from that into our session two. Let me just introduce to you Tina Galino. Now, there is a biography in the program, but I just thought I'd mention a couple of highlights. Tina is the chair of the Barwon Disability Resource Council, and she is also a proud member of the LEAD Barwon Project, which is run by the City of Geelong, a program that provides advocacy training and community development support to participants of the NDIS here in the Barwon region. She's also been involved in some of the leadership projects run by Women with Disabilities Victoria as a reference group member, and the programming around enabling women and enabling women in the gender empowerment program. So let's hear from Tina. Tina, you are a person with a disability and you're a participant of the NDIS here in the Barwon region, and I understand you're on your second plan already, so you're a bit of an old hand at this already.
Yeah, just a little bit. Talking about some of the things that you mentioned that I've been doing or aren't doing, I mean, it's now been possible because I'm now getting the appropriate level of support around personal care. I suppose we could step a little bit back to my first plan. I'm now on my second, but it's interesting. I think we need to go a step back to my first plan, because really before that I was living in crisis. I was not having, I was only being able to get up, have assistance to get up, only getting toileted at bedtime, and I'd be lucky if I got breakfast every morning. But now this is how my day looks. We have a 2.5-hour shift of a morning, and then I have what I call a twinkle and tea shift and a bed shift. But also, like today's conference, I could come confidently to the conference with my support worker because I need personal care. We're able to organise a change bed. We're able to organise a hoist. But those things before NDIS weren't possible for me because I'd been living on the DSR waiting list for 14 years, waiting for support.
And just for those who don't know, the DSR, what's that?
The Disability Support Register. I certainly didn't have the support needs that I have now when I first started, but nobody should ever go through what I ever went through ever again, where they have to basically beg, plead to be put on the toilet.
Mm. What were your... I mean, that just sounds horrific.
I didn't realise how horrific it is until I'm now into my second plan, where I'm now talking about goals and what I want to do in the future.
Yeah. I just want to just unpack a little bit about that not-so-fabulous time. When your basic support needs aren't getting met, what are your expectations of what life is going to be?
You actually start not to have any. I realise now that because I'm into my second plan, I was actually sleeping my life away, because I was struggling to do the most fundamental things, like eat, prepare food. You know, I might make a meal one day, but if I didn't have the energy to make it the second day, or most of it ended up on the floor, because it's quite an effort to do it now, you just went, oh, well, that's what that meant.
Mm. So when this thing called the NDIS came to town and you were in the region, which therefore made you eligible, and you'd been on the Disability Support Register list for such a long time. What were your concerns about proceeding, like contacting the NDIA, the National Disability Insurance Agency,
well,
and actually getting a plan?
Actually, what happened when you're somebody like me who is just waiting for support, we were probably the first group to go through the NDIS because we were the most immediate group in need. So we were actually contacted by NDIS. My story is a bit interesting in that. I was helping do a dry run before the plans were actually activated. So just to have an idea, before they opened the office doors, we did some scenarios of what they might expect. And I didn't expect to be told that day that they wanted to start my plan fairly straight away, given the circumstances I was living in. And I've got to say, I was a grown woman in tears. I think just out of sheer relief.
And what did you get when your plan was developed? What was on the plan?
I suppose what I need to talk about, the plans are a social model, not a medical model. And I had difficulty in talking about goals initially because of in the situation that I was in. I couldn't have completed my first plan without a supportive and advocate, just for another person to go through those goals to actually help me turn them into goals of being able to actually get out of bed, get the help, the personal care I needed, and then move into life again by engaging in things with women with disabilities. That's enabled me to do those things.
That makes me think, you know, a lot of people have just gone through the VCE exams, and your comment makes me think of that. Like a lot, I remember when I was 17 and doing my VCE, and I thought, everything hinges on this exam. My whole life depends on what my results are going to be. And that made me think, did you think that about the plan? Like, oh, God, I don't even know what to ask for.
Yeah.
Now someone's supporting me, but am I asking for the right things?
Yeah, I think because I was living in a situation where I wasn't getting my fundamental human rights met, I couldn't think in terms of goals and aspirations at that time.
So what was the process, the mental process that you went through to actually ask for what you want?
Well, I've got to give credit to my advocate, but also my planner. Somehow he managed to realise, you know, my goals were actually to stay living in my own home. Somehow he was able to translate my level of personal care to that, you know, as my main goal, as one of my key goals. And my other key goal is to continue to shape and drive what the disability sector looked like. From all the conversations that we had in developing my plan, he was able to, with the assistance of my advocate, help me shape what I now actually see as the foundations of my plan that are now building blocks for the rest of my plans.
How does Plan 1 and Plan 2 differ?
It's really interesting. When I go to do Plan 2, I didn't take an advocate this time because I was in a better headspace. I could actually think about goals and aspirations because those key fundamental human rights are being addressed in an appropriate manner. So I'm now looking at some further study.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you looking at doing?
Certificate 4 in training and assessment.
Fabulous.
And I'm even thinking about work again.
Ah, excellent. Excellent.
Sorry.
May I ask what is in your current plan? What support is being provided?
We've talked about the personal care stuff. But the one that I think is most interesting, and this is the thing people need to understand, it's no good me giving you detailed bits about my plan because we're no longer living in that box system that we had previously of where you had to fit into a system or fit into the box that was set out by the Disability Support Fund and things like that. One of my little quirky line items, I call it, you know, I'm just a greedy person, Robin. I have a physical disability, as you can see, most people can see, but I also have visual issues. Okay, I don't have 20/20 vision in either eye, and I also have depth perception issues. So one of my little quirky things is I have, we have what they call, I love the language too in the plan, it's called social and civic participation instead of community access. And one of my little line items is around my vision stuff. Going into different environments, I have some hours in my plan to support me to do that. So that's something that's particular about me. Mm. So, and it's really good to be talking about those things that make it possible.
What advice do you have for people who are not yet participants of the NDIS about what they need to do, one, to get ready for making a plan, and then for two, actually taking up the support?
Look, understanding that it is about your disability supports, and also it's really important for the first plan, I reckon, to actually take a paid advocate with you. Because it's having that second person in the room with you to help you digest the information that's being presented to you.
That's an interesting point, a paid advocate, so yes. Or a funded advocate.
Yeah, a funded advocate.
Okay. As opposed to a family member or other, what would your reasoning be?
My reasoning for that is, whether it's a family member or a friend, we're emotionally involved. It's my life we're talking about. We're a paid, funded advocate. Is a step back. Mm. So they can help you put the information you're given in a good way so that you understand how that it sits, and if you've got questions or you think something's not okay, that's the time to use your advocate. But also when your plan's set, it's not like it's set in concrete anymore. Like in my first plan, I had to upgrade a lot of my equipment, so we didn't worry about putting in maintenance in my initial plan, but as we went along, as we were waiting for the new equipment, we needed maintenance line items. So there was some interesting things that had to happen there because NDIS is in a, well, I still say launcher. I don't know, it's not the political word used, but I figure it ain't going away. They can use trial all they like, but as far as I'm concerned, that red T-shirt would go back on if they ever decided that it was going to change. But so, you know, and that was about having conversations. Because in this launch of site, you have a planner that develops your plan, and then you basically hand it over to a local area coordinator that actually that you know, basically is your conduit between you and the planner. So yeah, we'd put in for all my new equipment that had been approved, but I had to keep the other stuff going while I was waiting on the new stuff. So we hadn't put in line items for maintenance. So that was a matter of going back to NDIS because they weren't sure how it was going to work because it's still an agreement between SWEP and NDIS at present.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't quite know how the emergency response stuff would work. And they said, well, you know, you could ring your LAC and your planner. I said, well, that's really nice. That will work really well between 9 and 5. Well, what happens when my hoist or my chair decides to play up over the long weekend? Because guaranteed it's going to be a Friday night or Easter Saturday when that's going to happen. Mm. So it's nice to know that we've shifted some thinking around that. And now when it's an emergency requirement, you just ring SWEP like you used to and they put it down as an emergency response.
And SWEP is the provider who actually delivers those supports that you need.
They're like the wheelchairs, the shower chairs, catheters, all sorts of things. But I suppose the other bonus is it's the first time in my life and that of my family we haven't had to allow our dignity to disappear because my wheelchair's been fully funded at $22,000.
Excellent. Yeah. We've got a couple of minutes for questions from the floor. Carol from Barwon Disability Resource Centre is here with a roving microphone. So if you do have a question, please raise your hand and wait for Carol to bring the microphone to you.
Hi, Tina.
Hi.
Can you say your name and if you're with an organisation who you represent?
Is that working? Ah, there we go. Hi, Tina. Deb Connick. I'm from DHS. I love hearing your stories. I think it would be interesting for everyone to know in terms of the SWEP and the equipment that you often talk about the fact that you don't have to pay a gap anymore. And I think that's, you know, a really fantastic outcome through the NDIS. Have you got any comments you could make about that?
Look, the other thing that I've discovered, because I'm now getting a shower commode chair, lucky me, it's worth $8,000. But that's been an interesting exercise in itself, because the OT that I have always used did the original assessment, and you know, we ticked the box that said 800 for the commode chair. And I remember saying to my original planner, because it was in my original plan, I said, I don't think $800 is going to cut it. And like, my query to NDIS is around their benchmarks for their equipment, but also having gone through the process, because we had to do an independent assessment. That's okay, NDIA got the quote and went, oh my God, it's a gold plated, which is fair enough. It was not just about the money, but also making sure it's the right piece of equipment. But I wonder whether that's the smartest use of the human part of the resource. The OT I've got, I classify her as the matriarch of occupational therapy. What she doesn't know is not worth knowing. But I wonder, from her, with her knowledge base, whether that's a smart way to use not just the money resource, but the human resource of... You know, she's not going to recommend a piece of equipment that isn't right for me. And the thing that I've learnt with working with her over the years, you usually get the equipment right the first time round. So that's my only comment in that process. It wasn't a terrible or bad process for me or the independent OT, but we're having a bit of a giggle when we did the second independent thing. She goes, if they asked me to do a third one, she said, I have no idea what we're going to do. Because one of the chairs that she got me to try, if we'd taken me out of this thing, I would have just slid straight onto the floor. So that's just my only comment. And all the things that I'm learning about the process, yeah, is the benchmarks that are set. Because there's groups like me that are never going to fit into equipment that rolls off the factory floor. And I know I'm not the only one.
Yeah. One more question.
Mark Thompson from Grampians. Did you include recreation and travel in your package at all?
Well, what happens with your package? Well, with me, NDIS do what they call a functional assessment. And again, thinking about in terms of a social model, it looks at mobility in a really broad sense. Recreation, again, going back to the language of civic and social participation, that's actually covered in that broad sort of heading in terms of the social model, because I need personal care, whether I'm doing work things or whether I'm doing social things. So those things are looked at in a functional assessment. For somebody like me, the basis is a functional assessment where they look at it in the broader context of what sort of transport I can or can't use, and those are the things, I guess, that they use. And that was developed with my physio and OT and in those sort of broader types of headings around my daily living requirements to my ability, because it's not just about getting you out of bed and taking the toilet. It's actually making sure that you can actually participate within your community, whatever that means for you. Again, my plan is about me, and your plan, when that time comes, should be about you.
Thanks, Tina. That's a great place to end your address. Thank you very much. Will you join with me in thanking Tina for... Tina, I'll present a gift to you in a moment, but Nathan from Vimiac, if you could come up to the front, please. Nathan is going to introduce a short video to round off this session, and then if our speakers for the next session could all please assemble where Tina currently is at the moment, and then we'll have you ready to go once the video presentation has concluded. Thanks.
Thank you, Robin. My name's Nathan. I've just realised we've got possibly a logistics issue here, how I'm going to actually push a button for a video which is 20 metres across the room. we'll work it out. Just quickly before I begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land we do meet on today and acknowledge elders past and present. And thank you to Tina as well for your talk. One of the things with the implementation of the NDIS, particularly in the Barwon region, is we know that in relation to mental health, we face quite a unique set of issues. I've been working with Vimiac as an advocate, working within the Barwon region, and have been working extensively with consumers down here around some of the issues people have been facing. More recently, I've also been working very closely with Indigo Dayo, who is the general manager of consumer and carer advocacy through my fellowship as well. Part of the work we've been doing is working very closely with people with a lived experience of diagnosis of mental illness or facing emotional distress, and trying to raise their voice in what's been happening down here. A lot of this work has actually culminated in a forum which was hosted several weeks ago in this very venue. And as a result, we've put together a video of what people's experiences have been. The video kind of covers two main kind of issues that we've been facing with their mental health. One is around the notion of permanent impairment in relation to the eligibility criteria. And the other is another unique issue that we're facing in Victoria, where pretty much all of our community mental health supports, there's been the bilateral agreement between the state and federal governments has meant that all of community mental health support funding has gone into the NDIS, which we know that means that there's going to be a lot of people who may be ineligible who now have nowhere to go for support. So, just a quick note on language, and I'm glad Tina mentioned language before as well. It's quite a sensitive issue for a lot of people that we are talking about notions of permanent impairment and disability in relation to mental health. It's more looking at the impact that these kind of terms have on that space. We've had a few comments already that it can be a bit tricky when we're speaking about disability and permanent impairment that we're not actually marginalising or ostracising any other members of the community. So please keep that in mind while we are showing this video. So I won't waffle on too long. I will be presenting later on today on the issues that mental health is facing as we integrate it into the NDIS. So please check out the video.
I think more people will fall through the cracks that really need help like than ever before.
The eligible for NDIS funding, one has to sign an agreement that one is permanently disabled. And it's a major moral dilemma. They don't know what they're asking us to sign, really. It's like signing yourself to a doom of sorts and saying, I give up, I'm never going to recover. And all of this do, like it or not.
so we can see some of the information. We can see some of the information in that particular video is already past the choose by date. We've had our election. We have a new government in place. We're also aware some of the funding as part of the bilateral agreement has also been extended until June of next year. So presently there are people who may not be eligible for NDIS or who have not opted to participate with the NDIS are still receiving support. We're still uncertain as to what the future looks like here, but we just thought it's a great opportunity to present the real stories of real people within the region and how this the implementation of this new system has affected people. So thank you.